All right, one more time.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
All right, this is why I'm going to quit podcasting. I cannot compete with that voice.
You hear it?
I hear it. You've got such a natural voice, I just can't compete with it.
Yeah.
You've got a voice built for podcasts.
It's going to sound really, you'll hear it.
Oh, okay.
We hear it.
In fact, I'm just going to go ahead and put myself on mute now, and you do all the talking for the next hour.
Nah, man. Yeah, I can't do all the talking. You're going to be asking me things, though, right? I'm not just talking off the top of my head.
I've seen you give a spontaneous sermon for 90 minutes.
But what are we talking? Politics? Are we talking politics?
I think politics we can talk.
I'll tell you this. You know me. I went and did my research.
Okay.
And I will guide our guest through various topics.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll help.
Okay. Some that he would expect, some he may not expect.
Oh.
I don't see any topics that I can't discuss.
Okay.
All right. 3, 2, 1. And cue the intro music. Welcome to episode 31 of Black, White, and Blue in the South, a podcast discussing Democratic politics with a Southern flair. I'm Bill Kimmler.
I'm Jamil Brooks.
I'm Bishop Oliver T. McCray Jr.
Oh, welcome, Bishop. I can't believe we were able to get someone of your stature to come on our show.
Right?
That is just incredible. Well, we are so glad you said yes.
Glad to be here.
We are coming to you from Greenwood, South Carolina, a little red county in a very red state. If you like what you hear, please leave a rating and a review. Tell your friends about us. Follow us on social media. Or better yet, enroll your children into Senator Katie Britt School of Acting, which will guarantee your young little drama queen will be fast-tracked to the Academy Awards. Are you familiar with Senator Katie Britt?
Yeah.
I don't know her.
Oh.
I need to get to know her.
Did you watch Joe Biden's State of the Union address?
I did. Oh, Katie Britt. Oh, yeah,
that
the response.
Katie
yeah.
Britt.
Oh, yeah, the one that gave the response.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Step for Wives.
Yeah.
Step for Wives. That's what I saw.
Yeah. Let's take a little bit and see and see her acting talents.
Good evening, America. My name is Katie Britt. And I have the honor of serving the people of the great state of Alabama and the United States Senate. Growing up, sweeping the floor at my dad's hardware store and cleaning the bathroom at my mom's dance studio, I never could have imagined what my story would entail. To think about what the American dream can do across just one generation, in just one lifetime, it's truly breathtaking. But right now, the American dream has turned into a nightmare for so many families. The true, unvarnished state of our union begins and ends with this. Our families are hurting. Our country can do better.
You've seen it.
Isn't that incredible? Senator Katie Britt, everybody.
So this might be the right movie to say, but you've seen the movie Get Out.
Yep.
Yes. Jordan Peele movie, right?
Yeah.
I heard that analogy on some part.
That's what I see. Yeah, when she do that, I think Get Out. It's like run right now.
Get out.
It's over.
The Saturday Night Live thing was awesome, though, man.
Of course, that standing ovation from all of Hollywood's elite, that went on for 30 minutes, and I had to cut it down for the sake of this show, of course.
Oh, wow. I don't know who talked her into that.
Let us know what you think by dropping us a note at blackwhiteblueinthesouth@gmail.com. Send us your comments, questions, topic ideas. You can find us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Threads, and Mastodon. We share video clips of our episodes and links to news articles that'll make you more informed. Bishop, are you on all those social media platforms?
Absolutely.
That's wonderful. He's a man of the people.
Absolutely.
We have a Linktree page that can connect you to everything. So look at those show notes where we'll have that and links to all material mentioned in today's episode. So, Jamil, instead of our normal introductory banter, I want to get to our special guest. But before we do so, there is an important thing we want to talk about.
Fired up! Ready to go!
Fired up!
Ready to go!
Fired up!
So, Dr. Jameel Brooks, I have to ask, today is Thursday, March 21st, when we're recording this episode, and I have to ask you, are you feeling fired up today?
Like, really fired
up. Are you feeling ready to go?
Yes.
And why is that? Inform the audience.
Oh my gosh, because I just filed. It's official. I am on the book. I am on the ballot. How cool is that so far?
So even if you do nothing from here on out, your name is going to be on that ballot for voters in South Carolina.
South Carolina.
State House District 12.
District 12.
Your name is going to be on the ballot.
Yeah, cool thing. My 17-year-old will be 18.
Yay!
And so his first time voting, he gets the vote for his mom.
Look at you giving birth to voters.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yay.
So what was it like walking in there? Let's explain for those that have never filed before. What is this like?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be for everyone, but for me, I was super nervous. Like, I can handle this, but I thought, oh my gosh, you're about to go in there and you're going to sign your name and then it is going to be live. Well, I don't know why I didn't think it wasn't live already. I've been doing this since October, right? Running and campaigning. But I walk in and they're so sweet. And so I go in and...
Now, where did you go into?
The voter registration office.
Okay.
You go in. You can pre-fill the form out, but you need to sign it in front of a representative because they'll notarize it. I reached out to some of the volunteers and parents and had family and friends there. And when I got there, they were there. So I get myself together and I get ready to walk in. And I just want to give a shout out to Kathy. Kathy was there 30 minutes before time.
Yes.
Love Kathy.
Yeah.
Love her.
She was out there sweeping the parking lot, making
there.
Sure it was tidy.
And when I went to open, she was opening the door for me as if she worked there. And I love it. Like, she was there. So I go in and the paperwork and filing process is very seamless. It's easy. They're there to help walk you through it. I think I got emotional when I turned around to walk out. Because then it was almost like somebody had just turned the light switch on that said, let's go, Jameel.
That's right.
Type thing. And then I came out there and saw all of y'all.
Now, you were hoping to have a formal picture taken inside the elections office, but there was a little snag. What was it?
So I see everybody else with the iFile sign inside of the voter registration office. So I'm just going to make a call and ask, can we put that poster up so I can go back and take my picture beside that?
That's true. All of our friends and compatriots across the state who have filed, we see them posing in front of
real
this big
nice
iFiled.
Yeah, a little poster. But we didn't have it.
I remember Senator Nicholson stood beside a little iFiled sign, pointed at it, smiled.
We didn't have it.
We had nothing.
So guess what I did?
What's that?
Because Kathy said, write it on a piece of paper, Jameel. And I said, no, ma'am. And she said, yes, we need a piece of paper. And I said, yes, ma'am.
Yes.
And I wrote that thing on the paper. And she said, now let's take a picture with it. And I said, yes, ma'am. And I took that picture. I mean.
So I was outside with your crowd of adoring fans waiting for you to come out.
Yeah.
What took you so long? It seemed like you were a good 15 minutes inside
there. I was. So here's the thing that blew my mind. I'm filling out the form and he says, now whatever you put on here is public knowledge. And I go, yeah. And he said, so is this the number you want listed? Because everyone can look you up from that number and email. And I went, oh, wait a second. And I went to scratch it out and give my campaign number, the office number type thing. And he said, no, you just need to start all over again. And I was like, no problem. But so I turn around and look at my team to say, you think I should put all the information out there? And my whole team goes, no, they can find you here. And I went, oh, okay. So I think the delay was I had to start the form over again.
Okay.
And then not to mention that they were in there looking for the team, looking for the iFile sign. And because they couldn't find one, they was all like, well, we're going to get one from somewhere, moving stuff. I was like, we got to get out of here.
So I was talking to your crew outside of the office and we're all just sitting there waiting and I'm explaining to them why it's taking so long.
What did you say?
I said that you had to give blood work.
Oh,
you
my
had to
gosh.
Go through a whole history, give DNA samples, lie detector tests, the works. And one of your sorority sisters was like, really? I mean, she totally bought into it.
No.
But fortunately, Cherry was there and she knows me and says, don't listen to me.
Don't listen to Bill.
So that was fun. But Jameel, congratulations.
Thank you.
I am excited. Yeah. I cannot wait for my turn to join the ranks.
I know.
But I think you were also surprised to find that your name immediately went on the state registry there. I looked you up on scvotes.gov. And you were there.
He said, hey, as soon as I do this, you go on the register, you go live. And I said, okay, cool. Well, I'm thinking it's a little lag time.
Mm-hmm.
Update in the morning, I'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
I walk outside of the door and there's this guy, Bill, standing there with the phone saying, you're live. And I went, oh my gosh.
In fact, they can print a sample ballot now
Oh, cool.
And see your name there.
Oh.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, congratulations, Jamil.
Thank you.
We now turn our attention to this special guest of the hour.
Yay.
And we want to be mindful of your time, Bishop. So we'll try to cram in a lifetime of experience in just over a half hour.
We'll
Cliff notes. I think we can do it. Yeah.
So we're going to cover a lot of topics tonight. Some of them are going to get real heavy.
Okay.
Just give you a warning. So in fact, I'm just going to get right to it and pose probably the most difficult and important question of the evening. What are the Pittsburgh Steelers going to do with Russell Wilson? What are they thinking? What is going to happen there? And that's really, if that's the only question that gets answered tonight, I need to know. You tell me, you're a fan of Pittsburgh, right?
I'm a big fan of the Steelers, and I'm happy about Russell Wilson.
You are happy.
I'm happy about him and Justin Fields being.
And Justin Fields.
Absolutely. Much better than what we had. So anytime there's an upgrade, I'm happy about upgrades. So we got a 35-year Super Bowl veteran. We got him for $1 million. Denver's paying him $37 million.
Isn't it nice when another team is paying your player
salary? It's
wonderful
when somebody else is paying your money. Hey, man, you can play for $1 million, but I'm getting $37 million on the back end.
So that smile on your face is genuine.
I'm happy, man. That's better than what we had anytime.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm about to find out because the Philadelphia Eagles, my team, got your sloppy seconds.
You did. You did. And more power to the people. I hope he does well there.
What was his name?
His name was Kenny Pickett.
Kenny Pickett.
And he's from the University of Pittsburgh. And I think he's a Pittsburgh native. I'm not sure. I think he's from Pittsburgh. But now he's with the Eagles and he's behind Jalen Hurts, right?
That's correct. Okay. So hopefully we won't see him.
He's got bigger shoes to fill with Philly than he did at Pittsburgh. Because to come in for Jalen Hurts is bigger than just trying to start for a team that did not have a quarterback, period. We had Trubisky and we had Rudolph.
We're
in the number one conference in the AFC. The AFC North is the best conference in the AFC.
Well, you have seen Russell Wilson play in the last couple
of years,
I have
seen Russell Wilson play, but let me tell you something. What makes the difference? What makes the difference is when you have somebody as Tomlin as your motivator and your pusher. That really helps. He didn't have any blocking in Denver. He did the best he could. And, you know, his time ran out. His season was up. And he's moving on. Now, he's not going to be like Brady and play till he's, what, 40? Did Brady play till he's 40 years old? Did Tom Brady?
I think he was 57 when he retired.
Not 57, but he made it to 40.
He made it to 40, didn't he? Well, Russell's not going to do that. But I'm glad Russell is there for a year to help Fields out. And I think Fields will do better under Wilson and Tomlin. If Tomlin makes it another year, if they keep him for another year, hopefully they will.
Looks like you've thought this out.
Yeah, I thought it out.
And we are out of time. So thank you, Bishop McCray.
Let's do it.
No, you know what I'm going to be waiting on? I'm waiting for the season to start so I can watch you respond and post on social media. That's my highlight.
Listen, Bishop,
if they say the game is on, it's like, don't watch the game. Just go find Bishop's page and watch it from there.
It's only like that with Dallas, though. It's only like that when Dallas loses. When we win, I'm happy. When Dallas loses, I'm happy.
There is no disputing Bishop's talent as a pastor and a minister and a preacher.
Commentator.
But his true calling, I'm telling you, his God-given talent is going on Facebook Live with a
Monday
bowl of popcorn in his hand and the Dallas Cowboys in the background losing and Bishop just staring at the camera, putting the popcorn in his mouth,
not saying
a word.
Yeah.
He does that for like 15, 20 minutes live, and I am in tears laughing the whole time.
I'm telling you, that's my highlight.
You know the song in church years ago, if you can't say a word, just wave your hand. With the Cowboys, if you can't say a word, just eat your popcorn.
Yes. We find common ground
I'm going to get a lot of email on this right here, I'm sure. They're going to get me on this one.
Because you know the fans are out there.
Oh, absolutely.
There's some Cowboy fans out there.
Oh, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're everywhere.
My dad is one, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all my friends, most of Cowboy fans.
Well, as promised, black, white, and blue in the South covering the hard-hitting topics that affect all of us.
Here we go.
I learned something about you in a little bit of research and Googling. I learned you were born in the great state of New York.
Yes.
Where was that?
Tarrytown, New York.
And where's Tarrytown?
Tarrytown is in Westchester County.
Okay.
It's north of New York City, Ossining, up that way, going north. Westchester County is a very, very influential, well-to-do county.
Mm-hmm.
And I was born there in 1958. Got a birthday coming up on Monday, 66 years young.
Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I was born in New York, only stayed there until I was 2 years old, and then my mom came back down south.
Okay.
So I was really reared in Gastonia, North Carolina, but just born in Tarrytown, New York. And still got family up in the North Bronx and that place.
And I understand you went to school in North Carolina
School, high school in North Carolina, college in North Carolina. And God has been good to me through all my ups and downs. I'm grateful. Got to go to a HBCU. Got to spend some time.
What school was that?
Winston-Salem State University.
Okay.
In Winston-Salem. Earl the Pearl Monroe, if you ever heard of Earl the Pearl Monroe basketball. Great basketball player. Timmy Newsom went to the Cowboys. So Stephen A. Smith. Everybody knows Stephen A. Smith.
Yes, yeah.
We do. He's a Winston-Salem State alumni also. So 1980, I graduated there, left there, then did a little work at Wake Forest, doing some pastoral work at Wake Forest. And then I left there and started pastoring churches and got to go to Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary for a couple of summers, and then ended up at a small seminary called United Cornerstone up in Thomasville where I got my MDiv, and just got accepted into the D-Men program at United in Dayton, Ohio. So we'll see how that goes.
I love it. 66 years young and still working on that education.
Absolutely.
You know, my mama did the same thing. She had me when she was 19 years old and then had three more kids after that. So she was always a working mom.
Mm-hmm.
My junior year of high school, I started looking at colleges. I was the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom started getting the bug to look at colleges too.
Mm.
She enrolled in college the same year I did.
Wow.
Didn't go to the same school, thank God.
Yeah.
Wow.
But she started college and then she graduated with honors, got accepted into medical school.
Yeah.
Went on to become a doctor in her mid-40s. She got her doctor in osteopathic medicine. So she showed me, as you're showing, that it's never too late
never
to expand your mind and learn.
It's never
That's
too
right.
late.
That's
never
great.
Too late.
Now, we know Bishop McCray from not only being a pastor here in Greenwood, South Carolina at the very historical Morris Chapel Baptist Church.
Yeah.
But we also know you from your involvement in politics. You're very outspoken on issues, whether it's online or in person.
Yeah.
I learned something about Bishop and where he may have gotten that from. Do you know what he majored in when he was in college?
No, not poli-sci.
Tell us, Bishop.
Political science.
Poli-sci.
It was a poli-sci major.
Poli-sci major.
That's why it comes so natural then.
Public administration minor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Economics. Yeah.
So how was that journey then as a poli-sci major getting into the calling of ministry?
Let me say this. I was really, really on my way to law school. That's where I wanted to do.
No kidding.
I was going to go to law school. I wanted to be the next Johnny Cochran.
Mm.
But the Lord says, I'm going to
switch. There's only one Johnny Cochran is what the Lord said.
He said, the JCs, you got them kind of mixed up. So you're going to take Jesus Christ
got
Johnny
over
Cochran.
Johnny.
Yeah.
Okay, good job.
Yeah. So now I'm defending the faith instead of defending clients in court. And it has been very rewarding. I have always been a type of community advocate.
Mm-hmm.
That comes from my mom. She was like that. She was involved in everything, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts. Mm-hmm. She was on the finance committee. She was officer in the church. She was a school teacher, 42 years, fifth grade.
All right, mom.
So, yeah, I kind of got it from her. She was very outspoken, outgoing, real hospitable.
Mm-hmm.
That type of person. So I think that I get a lot of those traits from her.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now it fits. I can see poli-sci in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I love politics. I love democracy. I love fairness. Mm-hmm. I love justice. Justice for all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One nation under God.
That's what it say.
That's what it say now.
Mm-hmm.
Indivisible with liberty and justice for all.
That's what it
now,
say. I read that part.
That's what I stick with.
Uh-huh.
And until not only we read it, until we all experience it, then I will continue to be on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
And
so how do you counter the message that I hear often that the only problem with racism is people keep talking about race and that's the cause of racism today?
Well, the truth of the matter is you cannot ignore what you were birthed into. This country was birthed into racism. It was birthed by racism. We can ignore it all day long. It's just our truth. It's not only truth with black people. It's truth with all people. It's truth with the Native Americans. It's truth with our Caucasian brothers and sisters. It's truth with the Haitians and the Hispanics and the Latinos. And what people tend to forget is that during the transatlantic slave trade, most of the slaves ended up in South America.
And they did.
Before they came to North America. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have to really, really pray about some of those, our brothers and sisters of the South American persuasion, because when they deny blackism, they have to understand that blackism was birthed in slavery from those slaves that came from West Africa into the South America at the time. And then the Europeans kept going north to discover. Then it was Trinidad. Then it was the Caribbean. And then they eventually came to what is now known as America. But what people tend to forget is that slavery did not begin from Europe straight to North America. It went from Europe to South America, northward, and then into what is known now as where we live, North America.
That's a good historical context.
Yes. Yeah, and it's something that is very, very important. We don't really, really look at it that way. But when you contextualize it, you find out that when you see a lot of our Hispanic brothers from the Venezuelas, from Brazil, from those places, and they deny being black when they come to America, I like to ask them, well, where did your ancestry come from? Where did they migrate from? And when you look over the scope of everything, you'll see that we are infiltrated in all of it.
I think that's a key term, is infiltrated. And I think the masses miss that part. But infiltration took place.
Yes.
It existed.
Yes.
And it has a lasting impact.
Yes.
And I think one of the ways that we can attempt to start to heal from racism is to first acknowledge that infiltration did take place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We also don't like to talk about, that's a very, very painful part of our black history, is the fact that we had a civil war from where we came from in Africa, where we sold our own to the Europeans for whatever type of compensation they got. Mm-hmm. The Europeans just did not come to Africa and just slay all the Africans and just make people leave.
Yeah.
No, they had somebody working within Africa who decided that they were going to make money off of slave trade.
Now, that sounds like a sermon.
That
somebody
is
from within.
That's actually a
question I wanted to ask. You know, I grew up Roman Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
My experience of church was very different than y'all's experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever been to a Catholic
Absolutely.
Mass.
Absolutely.
I have.
Many times.
Okay.
Many times.
So that's what I grew up. I went to Catholic school. Priests and nuns taught me,
mm-hmm.
and I was an altar boy, and I even considered seminary when I was mm-hmm. early in high school, because, mm-hmm. you know, religious family.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Then I married. My first wife was actually an ordained United Methodist pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to experience a little bit of Protestantism.
Yes.
Not too different, a couple of organizational differences. But I tell you, when I moved to South Carolina over 10 years ago, and I started attending some of the African American churches,
You
could not be more different than what I experienced as a Roman Catholic growing up as a kid.
I believe it.
And I had so many questions. So I'm glad to have you here, because I just want to ask some things, some practical things. When I watch the AME pastors or the Baptist pastors give their sermon,
mm-hmm.
it is done with such a high intensity energy that I don't know if you get trained up on how to do that, or if that's just watching and practicing, or I'm going to play a little clip of one of your speeches, one of your sermons, just to give the listeners an idea of what I'm talking about.
I don't. I think the devil ought to try to stop this message. Hello, somebody. There's something more important, amen. That's what's on the outside.
Yeah.
What God is concerned about is what's on the inside.
Yeah.
And I think what's happened with the church is we care too much about what the church building looks like.
Yeah.
We care too much about where we worship. We care too much about stained glass windows and how soft the cushions are.
Yeah.
Do you know know, when I was growing up, we didn't have cushions in pews. We had a wood bench, and you set your behind on it, and you worship God. Sometimes you had blisters, sometimes you had bruises, but it didn't matter. You sat there and you praised the Lord, which agrees itself. Y'all ain't saying nothing. And you gave God the glory.
All right, so compare that with the priest's sermon that I grew up with in nomine domine es patu in Latin, and it puts you to sleep. It's all you can do to stay awake. Now, I dare anybody to fall asleep during one of Bishop McCray's sermons.
It's
you just
happening.
Can't.
Yeah.
His voice is in your ears. So I have to ask, did you come out of the womb that way? Or is that something you trained up on? Do you study that in seminary? Do you practice it? How do you get that style? Because you can't do that without experience.
The hermeneutic, the words, the homiletic, the actual words that I'm saying is the training. The passion and the emotion is the culture. It's what you're bred in growing up. Because everything we did in our community growing up as a kid was something emotional. Even when you see when we were little and see the Washington, that derogatory name that they, not the Commanders, but the other name,
right,
I don't want
right,
to say
right,
that.
Right.
They and the Giants and the Falcons and the Cowboys were just about the only teams that were on TV back when I was growing up. Cleveland Browns, Baltimore Colts. What we understand is everything that we grow up in black culture has something to do with emotion and passion. And it comes from what we were bred in our ancestry. I think we're emotional. I think we're musically inclined. I think the dance and the music and the way that we express ourselves is just a part of culture. I'm not saying that other cultures are not emotional. I'm just saying that when it comes to us, we tend to be very emotional people. We're very expressive. And it's not only with just with preaching, it's with when you run a touchdown and you see the dancing in the end zone. Well, who started that? I mean, that came from how we celebrate. You know, when you come out of what we came through in slavery, if you could celebrate in the cotton fields, how you feel when you can celebrate when they signed the Civil Rights Act, when women got their rights, when we finally had something to celebrate for. We're not just celebratory when things are bad. We're celebratory when things are good or vice versa. So I think it has a lot to do with building. And let me say this now, to be honest, all black preaching is not like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, it depends on what culture you're in, because just, I would say in the 21st century, Presbyterians, United Methodists, some of the more conservative denominations and reformations have more black preachers and more black pastors who are bringing that type of emotion into that type of setting. But it hadn't always been that way. It's easy also to have that kind of preaching when you have someone to support you, when you have somebody to push you. Mm-hmm. You know, in a black church, preach, Bishop.
Yeah.
You know,
talk you all the way
preach.
Through.
Yeah,
I remember.
That's like saying sick unto a dog.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
When I did my first campaign and I spoke at my first black church, and I got up there and I had my prepared speech and I gave it like a Catholic priest did, because I was at a church. I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
Right? So I was like, no, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody in the audience went, amen. I went, what?
Yeah.
She looked up.
What? Well, we talked to you.
Yeah, we talked back.
I was like, am I supposed to now have a conversation with you?
Or you do just
I
keep going? We're going to keep pushing.
I figured it out.
That's in us.
Yeah, but you're right. You know, when I was at that revival a couple of weeks back.
Yeah.
And now I'm comfortable as anything speaking.
Yeah.
And there was that constant feedback from the congregation. You can't help but get more energized and more confident and more in the mood. And it just becomes this recursive feedback to where it just explodes at the end.
So I want to pull back on what Bishop said when you say it's a culture thing. Mm-hmm. I had a conversation with someone a couple of days ago, and I was explaining to them what I'll say is blackism, or the culture of why we're so expressive and animated. Mm-hmm. There was a time when we couldn't speak.
Right.
So how did you get your message to the person on the other end of the cotton field? Mm-hmm. Like, how did you express what you were feeling if you weren't able to verbalize it? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a lot of how it is ingrained in our culture to be expressive with our hands and, you know, to enjoy dance. Dance for us sent a certain message, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Now, it's sending different messages for different people, but that message is what we knew, and that is how we communicated. Mm-hmm. So when you go from time to where you couldn't speak, and you learned, I mean, it's in you now. It comes second nature for us to know what that feels like. To a time to where now you can verbalize, it's just like we got the best of both worlds. We can now say it from our mouth, and we can also use other extremities to get the point across.
You could tell your upbringing, because even in our podcast, you know, I go through and edit it with a fine-tooth comb.
Yeah.
And every time I'm talking, there's you in the background. Mm-hmm. 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 Just encouraging it along. I just think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Moving away from the style to the content, another difference that I see in these churches is the topics you bring to your sermon are contemporary topics. They're issues of the day. They're very real. You're not filtered at all. You're going to tell it like you see it. And then you always tie it back to the Bible message, but you'll bring up the political topic of the day.
Absolutely.
Are you asking him to talk to the role of the Black church in politics, or being so comfortable with talking about politics in the pulpit?
Well, it was more of an observation than a question.
That's a good question, though.
Yeah. That's an excellent question.
Yeah, I was hoping you were going to
go further. The truth of the matter is when you look at the gospel, when you look at the message of Jesus, everything that Jesus preached had an attachment to a social construct. Mm-hmm. When Jesus talks about feeding 5,000, 10,000 people that were hungry with 5 loaves and 2 fish, can you connect that with poor people and EBT? Can you connect that with people with food stamps? Can you connect that with people with health care? Can you say that there are 5,000, 10,000 people, 5,000 men, but not including women and children? So we're looking at around 20,000 people that were hungry, that had no food to eat, that could not go into the city to get food. The only thing that Jesus had to work with was a bag lunch from a little boy, 5 loaves and 2 fish. He took 5 loaves and 2 fish. He told 5,000, 20,000 people that were poor, 20,000 people that were disenfranchised, 20,000 people that had left their homes for a great message, 20,000 people that probably weren't at work, probably unemployed because they were following him as the gospel. And they were hungry. How were they going to get fed? They couldn't go into the store. They didn't have money. They didn't go in and steal. Could have become thugs and walked into markets and stole stuff, but they didn't. They trusted the Lord, and the Lord provided for them. He was the type of government. He did say that the government would be on his shoulders. It's not talking about the Democrats and the Republicans. It's talking about the government of the kingdom. And the government of the kingdom are the ones that Jesus fed these people that were hungry. Not only that, he healed people of all manner of diseases. Tell me that that's not had anything to do with health care. He didn't just heal the rich. As a matter of fact, he healed the poor. So how can we have a health care system in America that only favors people that have a certain type of health insurance where they can get healed? Jesus didn't wait that. People, that was a man that was at the pool of Bethesda. He had been laying there for some 38 years. He was lame. And when Jesus saw him, he said, "Do you want to be healed? Mm-hmm. Do you want to be healed?" The man had excuses. "Well, I don't have nobody to put me in the pool first." Jesus said, "Do you want to be healed?" The man said, "Well, I'm not strong enough to get to the pool. I can't get there on." Jesus said, "Do you want to be healed?" And that's also an issue, that we have a Democratic Party that believes in trying to not take funds, but raise taxes on billionaires in order for people who are at the pool who need to be healed so they can have a quality of life that everybody else can have. So there has to be a social construct in the gospel. but if not, then there's no gospel. The good news is about people being healed, about people being delivered, about people being set free. What about the widow woman? The widow woman with Elijah, the widow woman, the famine had hit the country, and God sent Elijah to the widow woman and said, "When you get there, this woman is going to feed you." Well, when he got there, the woman only had a cruse of oil and a cake of meal and mixed it together and made one cake. Elijah said, "Make this for me first and you'll eat the rest of your days." Well, you have this widow woman, she and her son, in poverty. A famine had hit. hit. How many famines had hit America? Economic situations in America was a famine. COVID was a famine. But people still had to be fed.
Now, the white Baptist churches also talk politics at the pulpit. Okay. I went to one Southern Baptist service here years ago. This was right after, this was literally the day after that mass shooting at the school in Florida. It happened around Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. But it was tragic. It was a young man went in and killed a bunch of people in the school, and the pastor the next day acknowledged it and said, let's pray for them, and then started preaching that this is what happens when you don't have a mother and a father at home, and started talking about the standard nuclear family. Now, forget the fact that he was incorrect, that this shooter had a mother and father. He was an adopted child, but he had a mother and father at the home. And then also that story about if you don't have a mother and father, you're going to turn out wrong. Well, I just want to point out, hey, let's look at the first mother and father. They had two sons. What happened with them? All right, they got a mother and father, and the very first two boys born on this planet, one killed the other. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, that. I just wanted to get up and argue with the pastor. But one thing I learned is that that's not the time or the place to argue with the pastors in the middle of his sermon. Yeah. It's not going to serve me any good.
I didn't grow up with a father in my home. My father wasn't with my mother growing up. My mother raised me with my grandmother. And I think I turned out to be pretty decent. I had bumps in the road. I had shortcomings. I had flaws and failures. But it's not how you start. It's how you finished. Mm-hmm. So I think she did an incredible job with me without a man in the home.
Yeah.
And the men in the community were my fathers and my uncles and my role models. The policemen were your role model. The teachers and the preacher, those were your role models in the
black community. Have worked very hard to be a role model in your community where you serve. And one of my first experiences seeing you wasn't as a preacher, but as a pastor walking the streets of some of the most rundown segments of the city of Greenwood, and you're picking up trash.
Yes.
And you had a megaphone in your hand, and you're, tell me about that. Where did you get that idea from, and what was it like?
I believe in being relevant. I'm a certain age. When you're 60 years old in ministry, you have to find ways to be relevant. And the way you be relevant in the black community is that you get from out the four walls of the building and get amongst them. Because a lot of the criticism with black preachers in the community is we don't never see you. We see you on Sunday, but what are you doing during the week? Who's he? He never visited us. He's never been to our house before. So I decided to the best way to do it was to kill two birds with one stone. The neighborhood needed to be cleaned up. The street needed to be cleaned up. There was trash everywhere. So I just got my trash can one day, and I just started picking up trash, and people started stopping me.
Didn't get a permit from the city. Didn't seek permission. Just got in your car and started picking up.
Just picking up trash, and people started coming to me and talking to me in the community. And when they came to me, I prayed with them and had prayer with them, and that prayer turned into a Friday night evening service when I was just taking my megaphone on my truck and just preaching from the streets. And I called it trash talk.
Called it trash talk.
Yeah. And that's all I was doing. Just, I wasn't talking trash. I was talking the gospel while picking up trash. Yeah. So that was very successful. And I can't wait to get back to it now the weather's breaking.
I understand that you're about to hit a couple of special anniversaries this month. Am I correct? So in addition to the birthday, you've got some other big milestones in your life.
Bill and Jamil, I'm so happy that 10 years will be celebrated on this Sunday. 10 years. At the Morris Chapel Baptist Church. 10 years ago, we came here. The Lord sent us here. We've been faithful over our assignment for the last 10 years. And this Sunday, they're going to say, thank you, Bishop. And it's always good to be appreciated.
Yeah.
Always good for your, especially from your community. Your church is there every Sunday.
Yeah.
But to see people coming out, you know, the mayor and you all and just Floyd Nicholson, Senator Nicholson, Representative Parks and City Councilwoman Betty Bowles and Robert Dean, just to have these people, the Divine Nine, to come and say thank you, Bishop.
I wanted to talk about Divine Nine. Are you in a fraternity?
I am. Kappa Alpha Psi.
No kidding. Okay.
Yes.
Our very first episode, Jamil had to kind of walk me through these sororities and fraternities because that's not something that I've ever experienced. And so you led an initiative to kind of bring that all together. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. The fraternities and sororities, the AKAs, the Deltas, the Omegas, the Zetas are really, really big in Greenwood County. Mm-hmm. Really do a lot of great community service work. I mean, just major stuff. And I said, well, you know what? Since we're here and we're doing it, why not just come together and try to do something as a collab, you know, trying to come together and put our resources together, put our ideas together, put our brainstorm together as one, and show up at school board meetings and show up at city council meetings and show up at county council meetings and let them see that we're not just separate sororities and fraternities, but we're unified. That's how the Divine Nine started, was in the civil rights era when we pulled together and we marched across bridges and we raised money for the National Defense Fund, Legal Defense Fund. That's where it all started from.
Well, we've got just a couple more minutes with you here.
I'm enjoying this, man.
It went by fast, huh?
Yeah, let's go a little longer.
I want to talk about...
I know. We easily do 2 or 3 hours.
This is great.
Yeah, we rock and roll.
I would like for you to talk a little bit about something that's just as important to you or maybe takes a close second to your pastoral work, and that's your family life. Tell us about your family.
I am the only child of a mother who was a school teacher for 42 years. My dad was a salesman, Bloomingdale's in New York.
Okay.
He was a salesman. My grandmother was a maid for a white doctor. And then I think he passed, and then she ended up being a maid for a black doctor. I have no brothers and sisters. I have a lot of cousins. I have a wonderful wife who is battling Alzheimer's and dementia right now. And she is just a wonderful woman. We've been married now almost 15 years. Mm. And she is just great. She was college professor, adjunct professor at the University of Tampa, which is one of the most prestigious schools in Florida.
Yeah.
So she did that. And then she taught 31 years. High school English, and she's been really, really battling Alzheimer's for the last four and a half years, and she's hanging in there. She's hanging in there real tough. I have 3 lovely daughters. I have 4 lovely grandchildren, and God has been good, man.
I am so sorry that you ended up with only daughters.
I know.
How did that happen?
I don't know, man.
I'm sure they're wonderful women. I got two grandsons,
though. You know,
okay.
But my daughters are off the chain, man. They're off the chain. They love their dad too.
I mean, being the only male in the house of 5 women, I'm suffering through that right now, and it's like there's no sink that goes untouched. You don't own a square inch of that house. It's all theirs.
That's true. I believe it's true. I'm the only woman in the house with all men, so.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite.
But I have to say, some of my favorite posts of yours on Facebook are when you take your wife out in the town.
I love the way he loves her.
My goodness. If anything, I want you to know what it does. It inspires me.
Yeah.
To do an act of kindness for my wife.
That's awesome.
It really does. Because sometimes, you know, you live with somebody and you just take them for granted. It happens. It's human.
You get busy. Yeah.
But I see you taking your wife out for a little spa treatment and that says, you know what? I'm just going to order my wife some flowers for no reason.
Absolutely.
And just do it because you got to cherish those moments.
Yeah.
Well, Bill, I think that what I really, really like to also convey to your audience is that fact, especially men, is that the vows that we take are very, very important. And I think that sometimes you don't learn how to value your vows until you get older. My wife told me, she said, what you did to get me is what you're going to have to do to keep
me. That's right.
So everything that we did prior to her illness, I mean, it's what I'm doing now. The spa, she was taking herself to the spa. She was getting her hair done twice a month. We were going to movies. We were going to eat. We were going to dinner. Those things don't stop just because you fall on hard times when it comes to illness.
Right.
You still find a way to have that quality of life and to do those same things. And that's what I try to be consistent in doing that. And I hear a lot of people have given me compliments by doing that, but it's not something that I do because she's ill. It's something that I do because I love her and I made a vow to her in front of God, her family, my family, and the preacher and the church.
Yeah. Understood. Final topic during our final minutes here.
No politics?
Well, that's what I'm getting to.
Okay.
And we have been talking politics this whole time, but you are actively a servant in local government.
Mm-hmm.
You serve on the Board of Zone Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
What is that and how did you get tapped to serve?
Before Tamara got sick, I was at, you can ask Mayor Wellborn and Mayor Brandon, both of these will tell you, I was at every city council meeting.
Mm. You were?
Everyone. I was there on the front row Whether it was something I was interested in or not, I was there as a support to the community.
Oh, I remember you there advocating for a public pool.
Yes.
Which I haven't seen materialize yet.
No, I haven't, but I heard that the YMCA is working on that. Good. That's what I'm hearing, that the Y is going to have a water park. I don't know if that's coming to fruition, but I'm hearing through the grapevine that that's where it's going to end up, at the YMCA, which, you know, I've got questions about that also, because I really, really, my vision was to have it in a place where we all could benefit from it. All children, the city could benefit it, and nobody had a monopoly on where it would be, but the city would have a monopoly.
So you got tapped to serve as on this board.
And I'm sorry, I didn't answer the question. Yeah, the Board of Zoning Appeals. Well, what I was getting to is by working with City Council, I think that that's where the trust came from, and somebody that they saw wanted to work in public service. When James Jones, he was on the Board of Zoning Appeals.
He was. Mm-hmm.
When he was not elected for a second term for City Council, they moved him up to the Planning Board, which left a vacancy in the Zoning Board of Appeals. And he came to me and said, Bishop, that's something you might want to do. And he
recommended me. I mean, did you have experience in cartography?
None. I didn't have any experience. The only thing I had experience in was just working with people.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't know anything about the zoning appeals. I had to learn it. I took the test and, well, took the class and did everything they asked me to do. And it gave me an overall knowledge of what they did. And now sitting on that board, and when people have discrepancies about their property, when people have discrepancies about their zoning, can this be zoned for this, and can this be zoned for residential, or this can be zoned for business, and then when there's a discrepancy, they bring it to the board, and then we make certain decisions on whether or not they can build there, or they can put a fence there, or where they can put a wall there. And it's really, really cool. It's really, really cool. And it's another connection to community. You get to meet people that you haven't met before. You get to find out and get knowledge about neighborhoods and communities you don't know anything about.
You can't look your, turn your nose down at these very important local issues. I mean, these are important
very
to real
important.
People.
Very important.
Yeah.
And Bill, that's something that I think that you and Jamel have done very, very well, is that when it comes to voting, of course we vote every 4 years for the major offices.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is, it's where you live in your local government that makes a difference. And it's who you serve in your local government. It's who you serve in your district. Who's over your district. Those are the people that you want to make sure have your type of, the same type of mindset.
Yeah.
And that's why I love you two. And if I was, I'm in your district, so I understand your passion. I understand where you're going with it. So I have to support someone who has my best interests at heart.
Well, our time is up with you, Bishop. We thank you so much for an absolutely enlightening interview.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, I enjoyed this.
Exceeded our expectations.
Oh, man, thank you so much. Thank y'all for
having
me.
We'll have to bring you back for round two.
Anytime.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Yes.
Well, I was in my head while he was speaking, I was rolling off different articles that I just wanted to keep bouncing, but I tried to stay on track.
You know what?
So if you were watching me, it was like, put that back.
No,
later
I saw
on.
You. I saw
that.
You.
Don't do that right now.
We'll have you back when Russell Wilson tears his Achilles heel 3 minutes into his first game, pulls an Aaron Rodgers on the Steelers.
Oh,
we'll
man, have you don't back say then. That, man, please.
Yeah, but before we bow out, I want to give you your flowers while you're here, and it's recorded. Things that we mentioned, I'm going to join a couple of the topics together. When Bill referenced the other pastor that was talking about the normal family, the nuclear family.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, and then you mentioned, I considered it socialism when you gave examples of how Jesus fed the hungry.
Yeah.
Right? All right. So I want to point this out. He healed the sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to point this out to you. What I see from a person in the community for you, Bishop, is that you are walking in those footsteps quite well, and that you are not, and we see what's documented in the Bible, Jesus didn't do this stuff either, right?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't go to people and say, if you don't do this, it's over for you. He did not go to people and say, you follow me now or you're done.
Mm-hmm.
What he did was he walked in such a way that it would draw people unto him. And I want you to know that I believe from a person that's out here, that I think that you are walking in a way that will draw more men and women into him. So keep doing that. Keep living a realistic life, touching people and meeting them where they are. You're absolutely right. Being in the community with the megaphone, that is how Jesus worked.
Amen.
And we recognize that. You might have thought you missed Poli Sci, but I see zoning board plus so much more. I'm going to put it out there. Bishop need to be on the ballot. Let me just go ahead and say it. Put Bishop on the ballot. But I thank you for being you. I thank you for being
Let's try it out. Governor McCray.
Hey.
Oh, wow.
Governor McCray.
Listen, I'll be right up there saying, bring me my ballot right now. Click.
You won't be talking about dogs chasing Democrats when you're governor, will you?
No, we ain't having that foolishness.
No.
Yeah. Thank you, Bishop. We know you have to go.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this episode of Black, White, and Blue in the South. We hope you enjoyed what you heard. Please take a quick minute and leave us a rating using your favorite podcast app and a review of what you heard today. If you are a blue dot in a red sea, keep the faith, keep up the hard work. Change only happens over many years of work and dedication.
Yeah. The end.
The preceding podcast is a product of Big Media and copyright 2024, all rights reserved.